This is a 5 train. The next stop is Wall Street.
Herzlich willkommen zur ersten Folge von Wall Street Weekly, dem Börsenpodcast aus New York. Ich bin Sophie Schimanski, Sie kennen mich aus dem Morning Briefing und ich freue mich sehr, dass Sie jetzt dabei sind. Vorneweg gleich mal, das ist hier keine Ein-Frau-Veranstaltung. Wenn Sie Fragen, Ideen, Anregungen haben, bitte schreiben Sie mir eine E-Mail an wallstreetweekly@mediapioneer.com. Wir gucken auf die Börsenwoche, die vor uns liegt und auf das Wirtschaftsevent dieser Woche. Fast 6.400 Kilometer von New York entfernt, in Davos in der Schweiz, beginnt ja das Weltwirtschaftsforum. In diesem Jahr übrigens zum 50. Mal. Und da werden sie alle da sein. Angela Merkel, Ursula von der Leyen, die neue EZB-Chefin Christine Lagarde, Banken-CEOs wie Jamie Dimon von JP Morgan, aber auch Hedgefondsmanager George Soros und erneut Greta Thunberg. Und dieses Jahr auch Donald Trump, der war ja letztes Jahr nicht dabei. Eigentlich alles, was Rang und Namen hat oder glaubt es zu haben oder aber sich Tickets leisten kann, wird da sein, wenn der Gründer des Forums, Klaus Schwab, einlädt.
Davos is not just an event, it's not just a conference, it is an experience. When you leave, I hope you have made many friends here. And friends particularly from other countries, bridge building. Second, I hope that you go home with one transformative idea, not just for your company, but for yourself.
Der Eintritt fürs Forum mit allem Drum und Dran kommt übrigens am Ende raus auf 71.000 US-Dollar, das hat die New York Times berechnet. Aber hat dieses teure Weltwirtschaftsforum tatsächliche Konsequenzen für die Wirtschaft? Oder ist es nur viel Wind und vor allem viel Geld um nichts? Darüber rede ich mit jemandem, der selbst schon mal dabei war in Davos, mehrere Male, mit Alan Valdez. Seit 35 Jahren an der Wall Street, unter anderem bei Goldman Sachs. Inzwischen ist er Partner beim Finanzdienstleister Silverbear Capital. Er hat eine ganz klare Meinung zu Davos und Sie hören gleich, warum Börsianer den Termin lieben, aber Anleger absolut nichts davon haben. Das Thema des Weltwirtschaftsforums dieses Mal: Stakeholders for a cohesive and sustainable world, also Anteilseigner für eine solidarische und nachhaltige Welt. Und genau darüber spreche ich mit Cinciana Dorobantu. Sie forscht und lehrt an der New Yorker Universität zum Thema Stakeholder Capitalism. Mit ihr klären wir, was der Paradigmenwechsel von Unternehmen hin zu gesellschaftlicher Verantwortung für die Anleger bedeuten kann. Es soll in Davos also mal nicht um die Wall Street gehen, nicht darum, wie Unternehmen Gewinne maximieren. Es scheint, als hätten Klaus Schwab und sein Forum-Team den Knall gehört. Hohe Dividenden und niedrige Löhne auszahlen, das ist out. Das war es auch schon in den vergangenen Jahrzehnten, aber dieses Mal wird man eben erhört. Die Proteste in Davos sind kleiner geworden, aber nicht verschwunden. Kapitalismus und Globalisierung würden Armut bringen und die Umwelt zerstören. U2-Sänger Bono sagte auf dem Weltwirtschaftsforum 2006 über sich und die anwesenden Wirtschaftsführer sehr sarkastisch das hier.
So here we are. Fat cats in the snow. And I say that as one. It is a great place to do business and we have some business.
Fat cats, reiche Leute also, die im Schnee von Davos Geschäfte machen und sich nicht weiter um ihre soziale Verantwortung scheren. Davos als Ansammlung reicher Menschen sozusagen, die sich weiter bereichern wollen, indem sie Kontakte zu anderen reichen Menschen aus- und aufbauen. Ja, sagt Wall Street Analyst Alan Valdez ganz offen, Davos sei ausschließlich ein Networking Event.
Yeah, you know, I've been to Davos 4 times. I can tell you it's a great networking event, very expensive though. You had long lunches, long dinners. Did it do much for shareholders? Probably not, but it was a great networking.
Auf die Anleger hatte also das, was in Davos besprochen wurde, bisher ohnehin kaum Auswirkungen, sagt Alan. Aber um die Interessen von Anlegern und Investoren soll es jetzt auch offiziell nicht mehr gehen. Stattdessen stehen Verantwortung für Mitarbeiter, für Kunden und die Rolle der großen Unternehmen in der Öffentlichkeit im Mittelpunkt. Es soll über faire Löhne gesprochen werden, über Gleichberechtigung, darüber, dass Unternehmen Gutes tun, Diskriminierung bekämpfen wollen, die Umwelt schützen und Ressourcen schonen. Und das hat Signalwirkung. Es ist auch eine Reaktion auf die sich verändernde Gesellschaft. Dazu hat Klaus Schwab schon im vergangenen Jahr ausführlich in der Öffentlichkeit gesprochen.
Particularly we have to address the imbalance of, let's say, the social gap, inequality. We don't see yet the innovation. How do we replace, let's say, an unbalanced system by a system where really everybody profits from and where we again in a good exchange of global goods, not only physical goods, but I'm thinking also of intellectual property, I'm thinking of e-commerce and so on. We have to integrate trade much more into an overall system.
Er ist bemerkenswert, dieser Paradigmenwechsel. Vor einem Jahrzehnt haben sich Risikoanalysten vor allem Sorgen gemacht um Vermögensblasen, um mögliche Börsencrashs oder Rohstoffpreise. Im Mittelpunkt damals die Theorien von Ökonom und Wirtschaftsnobelpreisträger Milton Friedman. In einem Essay hatte 1970 die Idee der Shareholder Primacy geprägt.
Es gibt nur eine soziale Verantwortung des Unternehmens, seine Ressourcen zu nutzen und sich an Aktivitäten zu beteiligen, die darauf abzielen, seine Gewinne zu steigern.
Er argumentiert also, ein Unternehmen ist nur seinen Aktionären verpflichtet. Ich spreche mit der Management-Professorin Cinciana Dorubandu von der NYU und sie erklärt, warum es für Unternehmen jetzt sogar attraktiv ist, sich um soziale Verantwortung und Nachhaltigkeit zu kümmern. Und tatsächlich, davon können dann auch die Anleger profitieren.
Hi Sophie, it's very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thank you so much for taking the time.
It's a real pleasure to be here and I'm very, very happy that we get a chance to talk about it a little bit today.
So first of all, what is it that a company can do to take care of their stakeholders? You looked into companies owning gold mines, for example. How could such efforts look like?
So as you mentioned, I looked into gold mining companies around the world. And I think it's very important to mention that the mining industry is not only a very important part of the global economy, it's also a very, very important industry to consider because they have every environmental, social and governance problem that one could think of. It's important to the world economy because everything that we get excited about today, every computer, every phone, every piece of medical equipment has started its life somewhere in a mine. But as I said, it's also a very complex industry that has a lot of environmental problems, a lot of social problems, a lot of governance problems. Over time, they got a lot of pushback from their various stakeholders, environmental groups, local communities, governments. I want to give you just a quick concrete example, and that has to do with community relations, which are very critical for mining firms. Because mining firms have a very clear location and they have communities around them, no mine director and no mining firm wants to have the road to a mine blocked by protesters from the local community or from the environmental movement. Any kind of disruption like that, a day of the road being blocked, can be millions and millions of dollars in terms of additional operation costs.
What kind of case can you make for different stakeholders and their interests?
Now, if you look at communities, I think it's important to recognize that oftentimes communities care about how a very large investment affects their well-being, more on an economic dimension. Oftentimes they care about inequalities or effects on inequality. I've talked to many community members and community leaders who will emphasize, oftentimes at the very beginning of our conversation, that the one thing that they are worried about the most with a big mining investment is that it will increase inequality within the community. It's important to recognize that there's quite a lot of differences among stakeholders in terms of what they are concerned about and what they care about in a relationship with a firm.
This sounds like there is an interest from a business to treat stakeholders the right way in order to make shareholders happy, almost.
Yeah, so I think my research overall makes a very compelling case for the business case of good stakeholder relationships. And that's for two reasons. We've shown in one study that companies that have very good relationships with their stakeholders have higher valuation because investors expect fewer disruptions and delays. So That means that in the context of a mining firm, the mining firm will be able to build its mine according to schedule and on budget, and then from there on go move to production and focus on these operations instead of dealing with protests and NGO opposition and other issues as well. In another study, we've shown this higher valuation is also due to the fact that when a company comes under attack from the environmental movement or from a different type of stakeholder, sometimes from a government stakeholder, then the companies that have better stakeholder relations are less likely to experience an escalation into a much larger crisis that can completely disrupt or even lead to a full closure of their operations.
We come out of a time of decades of shareholder primacy. So it has been a big change. Is it because companies realize that they're actually better off when they're taking care of their stakeholders as well?
I think the shareholder primacy model is being questioned these days for a number of reasons. First, I think it's important to highlight that even though in the past 50 years we've seen a period of almost unprecedented growth across the world in both developed and developing countries, the distribution of that growth has been very, very uneven. And with that comes a mobilization, an effort from civil society to ask very important and very big questions about how sort of the economic model at the societal level is organized. I think it's one of the things that has led us to this position. Today, we're asking these big questions about the role of business in society and what capitalism in the 21st century should look like. I think the other, and it's very related to the first one, I think over the last 20, 25 years, we've seen a growth in civil society movements, both the environmental movement and other non-governmental organizations that have really systematically and over time increased pressures on very large companies to rethink the impacts that they have, their environmental impact and then their social impact separately from that. And I think both of these things have brought us to 2020 when we're having conversations like this one, and of course, separately, conversations at Davos about capitalism in the 21st century. What does that look like? How much do we have to rethink our economic models, very broadly defined, you know, in business models, and how much we have to reweight shareholder primacies against the interest of all the other stakeholders?
I think this year is obviously the most sustainable one. It's the one that is the most progressive when it comes to these issues. Do you think it's an important sign? It can change anything at all?
I think it's a huge sign to have Davos embrace this theme in 2020, and perhaps not surprisingly that it comes 6 months after the statement from the Business Roundtable, in which more than 500 CEOs have put their names and signatures on a statement saying that we, as CEOs of very large corporations, are willing to move beyond the shareholder primacy model to think about, you know, what other stakeholders need to be considered every single time we make a decision. So I think it's a huge, huge moment in time. I think we're going to think about 2019, 2020 as sort of the beginning of, or almost like an inflection point in history of thinking on the sort of the role of business in society and the way to make business decisions. So I can't emphasize that enough. I think it's huge.
You mentioned the Business Roundtable, and I mean, they obviously don't want to upset their shareholders either. And I do feel like the resistance amongst institutional investors, shareholders, is still bigger than the one that comes out of the company. So maybe to me, it feels like there's still a step that we got to go. The final step to the acceptance that, hey, dear shareholder, you're not the priority anymore, if that is the right way to say it.
I think there is a little bit of a tension there. It's not as simple as taking a pie and dividing it and saying, if you get more, I get less. It's about how do we make sure that we grow that pie in the long term and everybody can have a little bit more. Let me give you a couple of examples because I think that it's much easier to understand that way. Take employees, for instance, right? One quick sort of thought is that if employees get higher wages, shareholders have to accept lower returns. But most people would agree these days that, and there's research supporting this, that if employees feel that their work is being recognized through better wages and through perhaps through more flex time or whatever it is that employees appreciate, they become more productive. They put more sort of effort into their work, and that benefits everybody. You see more innovation, you see more productivity overall, and at the end of the day, you see more shareholder returns.
Thank you so much for taking the time. That was a very interesting conversation, and I'm very excited to see how Davos is going to turn out.
Same here. Thank you so much, Sophie.
Und weil es gerade so schön ist, entlasse ich Sie jetzt erst, nachdem ich Ihnen noch eine Börsenweisheit mitgegeben habe für den Januar. As goes January, so goes the year. Und das kann Sam Stovall, Investmentstratege bei CFRA Research, auch belegen. Bei dem habe ich einfach mal durchgeklingelt.
If January is up, then the market has posted a positive performance 91% of the years since World War II, when you include dividends reinvested.
Das war's von mir, aber hoffentlich nicht von Ihnen. Wenn Sie Anregungen haben, schreiben Sie mir einfach eine E-Mail an wallstreetweekly@mediapioneer.com. Wir hören uns nächsten Montag wieder. Alles Liebe aus New York, Ihre Sophie Schimanski.